Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. All right, everybody, welcome to Wheelchair Nerds Special Edition, Special Report. This makes me think back to the 80s when I was watching TV during the summers and they have like the Special Report comes on and Peter Jennings would be on there. My parents would be glued to the TV. We now officially have a Complex Rehab Technology Special Report. In all seriousness, guys, we brought Jim Stevenson back to talk about what has been happening since we had the breaking news of Elevate being something that the CMS decided that they would consider to be medically necessary. What has happened since then? For those of us working in this, it feels like May 15th was forever ago. It was not, but May 15th was when the news broke. And we did do a podcast for you guys a few weeks after that. And now we are approaching mid-August. And we thought it'd be neat to check in with Jim to find out what the heck has been happening since then. So just in case we have people listening to the podcast for the first time, Jim, go ahead and give your quick little intro. Who are you? What do you do? Why do you know stuff about CMS and Elevate?
Thanks, Angie. My name is Jim Stevenson. I'm the Senior Market Access Manager at Permobile, and I've been involved in the industry work group who has brought power seat elevation coverage to the industry. It's a very exciting time. I can honestly say I never imagined that I would see this time during my career. I really felt that CMS was really dug in pretty deep on the coverage of seat elevation, but super thrilled that I get to witness this. And since the announcement is actually May 16th, just to make sure that we have our dates proper.
Yes, sorry
here.
Sorry about that.
No worries. We're starting to see it in the works. Claims are getting paid. People are getting paid a reasonable rate to provide the equipment. It seems like it's going pretty smoothly. We're still in a gap period or interim period, as CMS calls it. So there's still some details that haven't been fully worked out, and local coverage determinations and policy articles haven't been fully updated yet. Those are things, work that's going to be accomplished later in the year. Probably early fourth quarter would be my guess is when that will start kicking off, and likely to have a January 1st effective date with all the new policy language put in place and how it interrelates with other powered seating systems and how it relates with the power wheelchair base and things like that. Those are some of the spots where we're still kind of curious as to how this is going to play out in the long run.
So what does this mean for the average consumer or caregiver that might be listening to the podcast and they know that they are looking to get a new power wheelchair before the end of the year? They have had therapists tell them in the past that Elevate would be something they would utilize to increase their overall function, decrease their overall health. But in the past, it has been a no-go because it hasn't been paid for. What would you advise those consumers and or caregivers to do in terms of when they go in for their power wheelchair evaluation?
I think the best thing to do is just to make sure that everybody's on the same page and everybody's heard of this. We're a little over 2 months into this right now, and really only a little over a month as far as getting experience for how the process is working and how it's going and the success of people getting the equipment that they need. So don't be afraid to ask your provider, hey, I heard that Medicare started covering power seat elevators recently. Can we talk about that? Can we pursue that? And same with the clinicians too, because clinicians, not all of them are just all about wheelchairs. In order for them to be informed of things like this, it's coming from a provider or it's coming from a manufacturer sales rep. And don't be shy about making sure that people are aware, because if it's something that you're interested in, you got to get those guys on board to get it done. So that's definitely an approach that I would take. And the other thing I think that's important to note is that this new coverage is just for Medicare right now and Medicare Advantage plan. So anybody who is on a Medicare Advantage plan, seat elevation is now covered under those plans as well. We do expect over time that there'll be some trickle down effect. Pretty much any time that Medicare does something with policy or payment or things like that, the private insurances start following suit over a period of time. So I would expect as this takes off and becomes more mainstream, I guess, if you will, that more private insurances and state Medicaids and other payers and so forth will begin to follow suit.
Now, for those of us who don't live and breathe this, when you mention local coverage determination and how it's, we're in this gap period, what is all that? What exactly does that mean to a layman?
Okay, so The gap period right now, Medicare introduced this policy on May 16th, and they flipped it on. They turned the switch. It was effective on May 16th, but there weren't a lot of details about how it's going to work. Local coverage determination is basically the rules for how the Medicare contractors process claims. Policy article just also supports things about coding characteristics and what's necessary for an item to be covered. And what was announced on May 16th is what's known as a national coverage. So it's basically the foundation for coverage, meaning that we're going to cover this, but how we're going to cover it and what's going to be necessary to cover it is something that's written into local coverage and policy articles. And those policies, I heard recently that there have been some updates as far as like getting the language in policy removed where it says that seat elevators are non-covered because they're not considered to be medical in nature, or you know, whatever that language said. The local coverage in the policy article will be updated later this year, which will provide all the details, all the things that people are anxiously waiting to know and understand. That stuff will come and then be put into effect for policy probably January 1.
What does this look like for, I know you mentioned private payers, but what about Medicaid? And we know Medicaid's also a state-by-state basis, but
yeah.
Does this have any, I mean, this is how my brain works, right? So it's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid. In
That's
my
correct.
Head, I'm thinking, okay, so if Medicare, maybe Medicaid would be second and third party payers would be third, or is that just a not the right way to think about this?
I mean, I don't know if there's really any real logical way to think about it. Medicaid had already been paying. I mean, some state Medicaid had already been paying for seat elevation. So it's not new to them, but I do think that Medicare jumping on board to cover seat elevations will, it probably will affect state Medicaid programs faster than private payers, if I'm guessing. I mean, just educated guess. I would anticipate that there'd be an uptick in Medicaid and the private insurance companies, let's be honest, this is going to be something that they're going to be paying more money for. So I don't think that they're going to be sprinting to, hey, we need to flip the switch for seat elevation coverage, because that's more money out of their coffers that they have to spend. But over time, I mean, there's going to be the advocates of the world and the people who really need and want that technology. They've got a precedent with Medicare now, which will then over time start encouraging some of these private payers to jump on board.
I guess that's key. Kind of leads me to another point or something to think about. Even some of the stuff, I don't use complex rehab technology, but some of the things that my physician will say are medically necessary for me, I have to be the squeaky wheel who gets the grease, who calls the insurance company, who might not initially, we don't cover that, but then may actually look closer at policies and they may do that. So from what I have seen when it comes to equipment, it's the same way. It's really if you're being told by your clinician, by your provider, by your physician, hey, seat elevate is medically necessary for you. My opinion would be, and you get a denial, if you have private insurance and you get a denial, don't be afraid to call your insurance company and talk with them about it and say things such as, well, I know that CMS decided on May 16th that this is considered something that is medically necessary. Where have you guys reviewed that?
By a bunch of clinical evidence.
That's where my brain goes. Like, don't be afraid, because I think sometimes it does get tiring to fight for different things that someone might need for their proper medical care. Can understand that. But I think it's one of those things where one of our podcast guests who joined us talked about how she really didn't, you know, listen to the word no. No just meant for her to keep pushing to find someone who was going to say yes. And so I think at times that this is important to do, even with this, because as you mentioned, Elevates have been a big deal to us. You know, we've been all excited about it. We've heard therapists saying that they are seeing more and more folks being able to access Elevate on their power wheelchairs. But the reality is, you're mentioning, not all clinicians serve on the clinician task force, we'll say, for the industry, which the clinician task force, for those of you clinicians who are listening and might not know what it is, it's a group of clinicians from all over the country that focus on advocacy, that come together, use their brain power, their knowledge, and really advocate for what is medically necessary. But if you're someone who, say, is in a smaller, more rural area, and you maybe do a power wheelchair once a month, once every 6 months, it's not surprising that you might not have heard of this. So it's really important to ask those questions of your providers. Most of the providers, I would imagine, have heard about this on some level, but if they haven't, don't be afraid to educate them and ask them to look more into it. If you were talking to a clinician, Jim, and they came to you and said, well, okay, Jim, what do I need to know that will help me understand when is Elevate considered medically necessary?
right now, from a national coverage perspective, which is kind of the foundation of coverage, which that's all we have to go on currently. And the coverage guidelines are based around weight-bearing transfers with or without the assistance of a device or with or without the assistance of a caregiver. Same for non-weight-bearing transfers with or without equipment or with or without a caregiver. And then lastly, for reach, as far as being able to accomplish activities of daily living, being able to reach the top cover, being able to reach the shelf in your closet when you're getting dressed, being able to get up over a hot pot of soup, or just things that allow for people to perform their activities of daily living safely and independently. That's basically all we've got to go on from a coverage perspective right now. And just important that for a clinician that believes they have a client that meets the medical necessity requirements, then the important part is just making sure that you get it documented and explain how and why seat elevation is going to be beneficial, whether it be from a transfer perspective or whether it's just going to allow them to do more independently to take care of themselves. It's not a far reach. I mean, but again, when things aren't documented, it's as if they don't exist. So we got to make sure that we have decent enough documentation to support the reasons why seat elevation is going to help someone.
And it's not an automatic either. I think that's automatic. Important too.
Even though the coverage guidelines are fairly broad, we still need to make sure that we have documentation that supports that need.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, clinicians, we have a little disclaimer we say at the beginning of this podcast too, but just to reiterate, this is all, you know, related to your clinical licensure, your clinical decision-making as far as what is medically necessary. This is not something that you're going to just see automatically start popping up on all power wheelchairs. And it shouldn't, because quite honestly, there are going to be some people that Elevate might not be appropriate for, and that's okay. So really looking at understanding what is covered and why, just to make sure that we're covering our bases and utilizing the code and the approval of this as it should be and not abusing it, which that sounds like a strong term, but that's really, you know, just making sure we're judiciously as appropriate, whatever word.
Perfect. Yes.
Whatever word you want to use. Yes. Yes. Okay. You know, it's a short update, but at the end of the day, it really sounds like the advocating for this and CMS making their decision on May 16th, that it is having an impact. When we recorded the podcast with Allie a couple of months ago, we were concerned. What was this going to look like? But it sounds like you're feeling positive about the direction we're moving in.
I feel pretty good about it. I mean, I'll feel better about it once the permanent policy language is put in place and we know answers to some of the questions that we really don't know. I mean, right now we're learning as we go. Mm-hmm. Everything that we're reporting on today is based on providers' experience or consumers' experience and what's going on in the real world from a perspective of Medicare policy language and so forth. I mean, we're still trying to sort through some of that. We don't know still, does a power seat elevation impact the type of power wheelchair base that somebody gets? So if you have a tilt and elevate combination, is that a single power option base or a multiple power option base? And that doesn't have significant dollars impact, but it certainly has impact as far as making sure that someone has the right equipment to support what they need. The other alternative to that is that they view it as though it's an accessory, a power accessory added onto the wheelchair, which in that part, then it typically handled more similar to like a set of power elevating leg rests instead, to where it doesn't really affect the base. It doesn't really affect extra electronics and things like that from a payment perspective. That's getting way in the weeds. So we won't, you know, keep heading down that path. But those are the types of things that from a provider's perspective are concerns, is making sure that they are submitting claims the right way with the appropriate base codes and things like that as well. So, and then the other thing too is, you know, not having it be part of the prior authorization program right now is a little bit, and I don't want to say it's concerning, but it's definitely causing people to feel less comfortable, less confident. We do expect that it will be added to the list of approved codes for prior authorization, probably part of the policy language update in the fall. But for right now, people feel like they're kind of shooting in the dark or not really 100% sure what's going to happen and how much am I going to get paid and things like that. For where we're at and for the limited amount of information that we have out there, I think it's going incredibly well. I'm not hearing too many situations where people are getting denied inappropriately or anything like that. Again, we're still relatively small sample size. The message is coming through that it's working and it's working pretty well. And it's something that's going to be a viable option going forward. So based on that, you can't call it anything other than success right now, I guess.
Nice. Real quick, I want to take you back one, you know, a couple of steps, because we do have a lot of clinicians who are, some are experienced, some are not so experienced in recommending complex rehab technology. And then same goes with some of our folks who are listening that utilize complex rehab technology. When you say prior authorization, what exactly does that mean for someone who's hearing that for the first time?
Well, prior authorization is just an opportunity for the provider to submit all the documentation that's telling the story about medical necessity and whether or not somebody qualifies for the equipment, and they send it through to the insurance company ahead of time. It's like a, let's review this documentation and make sure we've got everything we need in order for this chair to be bought and delivered and paid for and all those important things as far as people getting their equipment. So it's basically just the chance to make sure that people have the necessary documentation in hand that will allow for the claim to be paid later on.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. It sounds like things are moving in a good direction. Do we have a ballpark time frame as when we're going to get to that next place where we're taking a deeper breath? Would you say January 1st, or is there still some steps?
There seems to be a little bit of debate, and I don't know exactly how all the inner workings of CMS work behind closed doors and whatnot. But the hunch within the industry brain trust, I guess, is that it'll either be January or April 1 of 2024 when things will be final. This is permanent. This is what we're going to be working with. Sometime within the next 6 to 9 months, we should have our policy at least permanent for the time being. I mean, anytime that you roll something new out, there's the potential for something to come up down the road that you didn't think about or you couldn't have planned for. Maybe some small adjustments end up getting made over time. But as far as the general idea of what it's going to look like in the long run, we should know that within the next 6 to 9 months.
Cool. With that, you get to 6 to 9 months, you can retire, right? There's no other things we need to advocate for, right, Jim? You're all done?
I wish it was that easy, but I feel like there's always something to advocate for, whether it's product or coverage or whether we're just helping somebody get the equipment they need at an individual level. That work never stops.
Absolutely. But I think this has been a great example. I have been mesmerized, I think that's the word that comes to my head, with how so many groups of people and individuals came together, from competitors on the provider side to the manufacturer side to special interest groups being consumers. It took all of that.
Yeah.
And researchers were stepping forward. Clinicians were stepping forward. It took all of that to move this, but it did move. That's the cool thing to look at.
Well, just to kind of put that in perspective, Angie, I mean, when it comes to a public comment period for CMS, they open these up for different things all the time. I mean, most of them get 50, 100, maybe comments or so on a particular topic. When we had our first round of public comments, we had 3,500, some pretty big number. And then when we came back for the second round, we got over 2,000 more. That speaks volumes to our little tiny industry and the support and being able to come together and put out the right message to get the right thing done. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and it was definitely one of the most impressive events or occurrences within this industry since I've been involved. I mean, it was just really, really cool to have everybody pull together and everybody be swimming in the same direction and all that good stuff. So it was exciting. Relationship with CMS seems a little bit different these days too. So I think just a collaboration of multiple different things is bringing some optimism.
For sure. That tees us up for what's going to be happening the rest of the calendar year. We're recording this in early-ish August, the week of the 14th. Here in the U.S., we'll be celebrating Complex Rehab Technology Week. And with that, there's some pretty big initiatives that we're really focusing on. Later on in September, we'll be doing some advocacy with some of our groups too. And I think the three issues that people might not know that we are talking about as far as advocacy do and trying to make some gains. One, folks who use power wheelchairs probably are familiar with this one, power standing. How's that one coming along?
We're actually industry groups getting ready to reconvene on this week to really start pushing CMS to bring this to the table, and let's get public comments open on that and start heading down the path. With seat elevation still being newly in play and all the work that needs to be done to get seat elevation up and running in their system and processing claims and so forth, it makes some sense that standing hasn't been hot on the heels of it. But we also don't want to be naive and let too much time pass to where it gets lost in the shuffle. So we're going to bring our industry group back together starting this week. And, you know, we've got some other avenues where we're trying to encourage CMS, let's get this ball rolling. So we don't have any specific timeline at this point, other than the fact that we're going to get to working on it and really start trying to push this forward now, too.
I know we've also been working as an industry on gathering more evidence on power assist for folks who utilize a manual wheelchair, aren't quite ready to go to a power wheelchair for whatever reason. There are a plethora of different reasons. It might not just simply might not be appropriate to go power. Power assist is something that, gosh, has been around for decades. Decades, yeah. Literally. But the funding is in the access for people to get the device they need hasn't been great, has it?
I guess it depends on your own personal perspective. It was switched over to the capped rental category back in 2014. And the capped rental side of things, you have to bill out 13 claims for one item. And You have to wait 13 months to get all the reimbursement. And it's 13 different claims. It's 13 claims that have to be processed by insurance. It's 13 separate co-insurance payments for the consumer. It's just unnecessary to have it be capped rental. We've been pursuing through some industry groups trying to gain support to possibly get that reverted back to a purchase option to where you can still do it as a capped rental if that's what makes sense or, you know, That's the way that it seems to be best. But generally speaking, people are not going to, you know, they're not going to stop a capped rental period in month eight. They're still going to need the equipment. So to have it be capped rental and wait 13 months for all that stuff to play out, it feels unnecessary. And one of the other things around power assist that's been challenging within the industry is that in order to qualify, at least through Medicare, is that you have to be a manual wheelchair user for 1 year before you can qualify for power assist device. So that's 1 year of extra wear and tear on somebody's shoulders.
I've got some friends that cannot propel the manual chair without power assist.
Yeah, that's exactly where this device, that's the audience that is going to benefit the most from that. But having it be capped rental or have to wait a year to get it just doesn't seem appropriate. So that's something that we're working on as far as trying to push some commentary along that line to make some changes there. One of the other things too, that we've been talking about this for a long time is special materials like titanium and carbon fiber and things like that really boils down to Medicare, you know, kind of takes the lead and most other payers follow suit with what Medicare does. And Medicare believes that titanium and carbon fiber should be included in the allowance for the wheelchair base as opposed to an upgrade or allowing somebody the choice to pick the type of material that they want their wheelchairs to be made out of. And it's not like people can't get those materials now. It's just the way that it goes right now, it's exceptionally difficult. It requires more outlay of money up front from the consumer themselves. And realistically, Medicare doesn't have to take this stance. If somebody wants to pay out of pocket for a titanium upgrade, that should be their choice. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I just feel like it's almost constitutional that you're taking away someone's freedom of choice and their freedom to spend their money how they choose to spend their money by making it difficult. I just don't think that's helpful for anybody.
So it sounds like as we head into the back half of 2023, thus far 2023 has been great for us in the advocacy avenue as far as Elevate goes. And then it sounds like we're gearing up for standing, for helping folks get improved access to power assist and also the materials they want in their ultralight wheelchair. So for our listeners out there, I would definitely say stay tuned to our Advocate for More site. We are going to be updating that very soon to include these three other areas. Already have standing on there. We're going to be adding power assist and materials in wheelchairs because we think it's important that everybody, whether you are one of our listeners who utilizes, you prescribe it, or you provide complex rehab technology, that you should be aware of the things that are happening in the industry and really join our voices so we can all be heard and hopefully get the same outcomes or similar outcomes that we've gotten with Elevate.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. I mean, just one last quick thing. I think it's important for the consumers who are listening in is that nobody's voice is louder than yours. We need you guys just as much to help fight these causes. Unfortunately for us, even though we're not wired naturally as human beings to be this way, but because of who we work for, our word comes across as biased. We all work for the betterment of all the consumers that we serve, but it's used against us because we make products and we sell products and it gets construed in a different fashion. So having a true consumer story and someone's voice who's living, breathing this every single day, Nothing beats that. No, there is nothing more powerful than a consumer who can stand in front of somebody or type an email or communicate in any way to speak up for this stuff. Just helps the messaging that we put together as an industry. It just brings it full circle and gives us the backing of this. These are the reasons why we do what we do to support these folks. And here's their stories.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I think we can wrap up the special edition of Wheelchair Nerds. We will be bringing Jim back periodically to give us some updates on what's happening when it comes to advocacy and access to equipment, because I think it's important that all of our listeners have opportunity to hear that. So thanks, Jim, for providing us that update. Very positive message I'm walking away with is we still have some education to do when it comes to Elevate, making sure people are aware that if it is medically necessary, they can get that on their power wheelchair. So clinicians and consumers and providers, be aware of that. It is being paid for, which is exciting here in the middle of August of 2023. More to come as more and more folks are able to access this wonderful technology that is medically necessary. Thanks so much, Jim, for joining us again.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobile. Today's episode was brought to you by...
The Permobile Corpus Seating System is designed to help you effortlessly achieve your optimal position with the assistance of technology. With up to 45 degrees of active reach, forward tilt capability of up to 14 inches of active height seat elevation, active reach and active height work harmoniously together to bring your world within reach. The seating system is constructed with quality from the ground up to ensure that you can easily find your perfect position to tackle any task at hand. Permobile Corpus Seating System is available on the F3, F5, F5VS, M3, M5, and MVS.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.